Parliament and the French Revolution. This lecture is one of two that considers the impact of the French Revolution on parliamentary politics. This lecture will look at the impact on Parliament. The next one will look at the broader context of popular politics. On the eve of the French Revolution, parliamentary politics was again entering an unstable phase following Lord North's relatively successful spell in government. The main issue that brought this to an end was the failure of Britain to subdue or defeat the American colonists, and the growing impact among the Rockinghamite opposition and the public at large of the ideas of freedom, representation and liberty that the Americans introduced. From late 1779 to 80, there were a number of crises in the government, and discontent culminated with a number of motions in Parliament hostile to the administration, including one that claimed the influence of the Crown has increased, is increasing, and ought to be diminished. Further decisive setbacks in the American War and the defeat of the government on a number of motions in the Commons led to North being swept from office in March 1782. And from that period until April 1784, there followed a constitutional crisis. The King was unable to obtain a ministry that enjoyed both his confidence and the confidence of Parliament. He was unwilling to cooperate with the Rockinghamites, but he was unable to find an alternative. The immediate result of the fall of North was a ministry composed of Rockinghamites in an uneasy alliance with a group around Shelburne, who was a conservative minister who concurred with the King's view on party and the monarch's prerogative to select ministers. The King tended to treat Shelburne and Rockingham as co-equal first ministers, but Rockingham in reality found himself undermined at every juncture. Charles James Fox commented that the administration consisted of two parts, one belonging to the King and the other to the public. The ministry was divided on every major issue: American independence, parliamentary and economic reform, and India. One phase of the battle was ended when Rockingham himself died on the 1st of July 1782. When the King heard of Rockingham's death, he offered the post of First Lord of the Treasury to Shelburne. But although his ministry had the support of the King, it inherited all the unresolved problems of Rockingham's administration. Shelburne's answer was to take the burden of decisions upon himself. In practice, he consulted the cabinet on nothing. In the Commons, Fox, who had taken over the leadership of the Rockinghamites, continued a tradition of massive opposition pressure on the government. He launched an almost unaided attack on Shelburne's ministry in the winter of 1783-4, exposing the weaknesses in Shelburne's negotiations of the peace treaty with America. The key to the survival of Shelburne's ministry rested with North. If North joined the ministry, it would be impregnable. But as Shelburne became more and more out of touch with Parliament, North turned towards Fox. And thus the way was clear for a Fox-North coalition. Shelburne was defeated by the Commons in February 1783 over the terms for peace with America by 224 votes to 208. The King was forced to give way as the Fox-North coalition took office. The new ministry insisted on choosing both the cabinet and the number of the list of junior ministers in the government. The Foxites argued that it was their right only to serve under men with whom they had confidence. The king did not accept this view willingly, but he had no choice. He even threatened abdication, but gave way in the end. The ministry's immediate needs were in the area of finance, and it has been argued that this was the reason that forced the king to surrender. Lord John Cavendish, the Chancellor, introduced a budget designed to raise £250,000 per year by taxation. The ministry also faced controversy over the question of an establishment for the Prince of Wales, who had come of age in August 1783, and with whom Fox had allied whilst in opposition, as both were against the king. The king opposed the idea of giving his son any allotment from the civil list, but again was forced to give way, and it was agreed the prince should get an annual sum and also immediate aid to pay off his debts. However, the major crisis of the Fox North coalition's short term in office was not domestic affairs but affairs abroad, in particular the issue of India. The previous reorganisation of the East India Company that had been undertaken by North's Regulating Bill of 1773 had proved in practice to be seriously defective. The Governor-General, Warren Hastings, had defied the King's Council and ignored attempts to recall him. Burke drew up a plan of action to reorganise the control of India and the East India Company. Political control was to be vested in 7 commissioners, who were to be MPs appointed by Parliament and holding office for 3 to 5 years. Commercial control was to be exercised by 9 assistant commissioners. Burke also tried to include measures of public accountability and to take into account the welfare of the subject people. The India Bill passed through the Commons comfortably, receiving strong support from independent members and those who had interests in India. But the government's opponents, which included the king, turned their attention to the Lords. The king therefore colluded in organising the defeat of his ministry on this measure. And this was the constitutional crisis. The king was acting against his own government. The bill eventually was defeated by 8 votes in the Lords. The ministers were thus in an odd position, living on borrowed time. They were determined not to resign, and thus the king was forced to ask them for their seals of office. Pitt the Younger was then able to enter office at the age of 24. Pitt's position was consolidated by his success in 1784 general election. This was an election that polarised the country. The country was split between Pitt's appeals to loyalty and Fox's claims that the liberties of Parliament were in danger. But the result of the election was that the old Rockinghamites, the Foxites, were routed. Pitt made a net gain of 70 seats. Only 83 out of 130 Foxites and 69 out of 112 Northites were returned again. After 1784, issues quietened down in Parliament as Pitt consolidated his control over the country. The Regency crisis of 1788-9, when the king's mental instability opened up the possibility for regency, failed to rally the opposition. However, it is possible to see some developments in the growth of a distinct Whig party during this period. They developed, for example, a rudimentary party organisation. The party had a general fund to fight elections, and this was controlled by the MP William Adam. Early in 1789, a central office was in existence with full-time paid staff, which received an annual allocation from the party fund. William Adam also manipulated the routine and practices of Parliament to accommodate party. He acted as the party's whip. Pairing became more systematic, and he was notified of intended absences from debate. He was acknowledged as the opposition party whip by Pitt and was informed of the order of business. The terms Treasury and opposition benches became common parlance in the Parliament of the 1780s. For the Tories, still Pittites, this was a period of consolidation and triumph. Any defeats in the Commons were merely transient. Pitt had the complete support of the King. The French Revolution, though, rocked the stability that Pitt had brought to the country and is of cataclysmic importance in the history of Parliament. The initial reactions in England ranged from enthusiastic support for the revolutionaries to cynical satisfaction at the humbling of the House of Bourbon. Fox's own reaction is often quoted: how much the greatest event that has ever happened in the world, and how much the best. It was hoped that France was following the example of an aristocratic revolution set by England in 1688. However, as the revolution took its more bloody course, the Whig Party began to disintegrate. The first stage came with the alienation of Burke from his erstwhile colleagues with the publication of his pamphlet, Reflections on the Revolution of France. Above all, Reflections illustrates Burke's sympathies to the preservation of historical tradition and was to be his legacy to the philosophy of conservatism. The second stage was the formation of the Association of the Friends of the People in October 1792 and the other more popular reform movements. This too polarised the Whig Party between those who saw the widening political nation as a positive view and those who feared what involving the working class in politics might bring. Pitt played on these fears and was helped by the September massacres of aristocrats and priests in France, which began the third and final stage in the disintegration of the party. Immediately, 30 MPs defected to Pitt. And the news of the execution of Louis XVI and the declaration of war initiated the withdrawal of another large group of Whigs. Eventually, things became so bad that in 1794, the Whigs seceded from Parliament. The fall of Pitt in 1801, after his failure to carry through a measure of Catholic emancipation, though, brought the Whigs flooding back to Westminster. The crisis enabled them to group round one of their old rallying cries, the undue influence of the crown. Even the unassailable Pitt, who enjoyed overwhelming majorities in both houses of Parliament, could not resist it. Thus, from 1801 to 1806, the Whig Party began to revitalise itself. And they were aided in this when Pitt died following an unhappy and unsuccessful ministry. This led to the very short-lived Ministry of All the Talents, which, although unsuccessful, gave the Whigs a taste of power once again. It's possible then to see the two parties emerging from the trials and tribulations of the 1790s and the pressures of the French Revolution, with all the elements that were to characterise modern parliamentary politics during the 19th century. Both the Whigs and the Tories then entered the age of reform, already having undergone major changes in their ideology, their institutions, and their policies.